From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just about a year ago, the fall of 2015, when two former presidential candidates confirmed that they would be running again in 2016. They had experience, they had name recognition, and they viewed the field of Republicans and Democrats as very weak. For the Green Party, it was Dr. Jill Stein. For the Libertarians, it was former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson. So what happened? Well, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton combined to have the highest negatives in recorded history for the two major parties. Shouldn't this have been the year for the so-called third parties? Jill Stein is stuck around 2% at the polls. Supporters of Bernie Sanders have not backed her almost at all. Gary Johnson cracked double digits in some polls, but a series of, well, I think you can say strange comments has at least hurt his ticket in some ways. Of course, some libertarians have said that he should have been in the debates, and he was excluded. Many voters have also lamented that former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld, the VP candidate for the Libertarians, is not at the top of the ticket. All of which might make you wonder, are we stuck with two parties? Will third parties always be considered lesser options or not taken as seriously? Because if not now, when? Stephen Nemirovsky might have some ideas about this. He's the author of a series of books about a third-party hero, and he's an adjunct professor with the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia University. He's coming to Rochester for an event on Saturday. He's on the line with us and one of our guests for the hour. Stephen, thanks for taking the time for us.
Oh, thank you, Evan.
Alex White is here as well, representing the Green Party here in the Rochester area. Alex, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
And Kevin Wilson, representing the Libertarian Party. Kevin, welcome to you as well.
Thanks. Good to be here again.
And representing the News Party is Randy Gorbin. It was a brief interruption.
I'm a write-in this year.
Yeah, I always write in Randy Gorbin.
Thank you.
What's going on, Randy?
This is, of course, a membership pledge. I do this just a couple of times a year. And again, another great example of the great programming you get here on Connections. We talk about the elections not in just simple sound bites, but in lengthier segments. You had talked to one of the major party candidates last hour for the 25th Congressional District. You've got representatives of the third party candidacies right now. And again, a topic that you won't hear a lot on many of the commercial broadcast stations or other venues where you don't get a chance to really kind of get into the meat of the issue. But we do need your help to continue with this kind of programming. And again, there's a lot of people behind the scenes that make this happen. If you could make any donation, any amount at all, we would appreciate it. The local number is 454-6300. That's 454-6300. Out of the area, 1-800-295-9994. 1-800-295-9994. And very easy, if you have the WXXI app on your mobile device, or you can also, of course, just go to your desktop or laptop computer, wxxi.org/give. And again, any amount you can do really helps us with the great kind of programming that you are hearing on Connections every day. Evan?
Yeah, thank you, Randy. Last week, we had the Libertarian Party candidate for U.S. Senate challenging Chuck Schumer on the program. Next week, we hope to have the Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate. We have not been exclusionary. We feel it's important to speak at length to representatives and candidates, and that's what we do. And if you support it, and I know you do because you're listening right now, 454-6300. Randy will check back later. And I want to start this conversation on third parties with the term here. First of all, Stephen, your books are called Third Party. And somebody said to me earlier today, Stephen, is that the term or is that sort of a, is that a pejorative? Third party is okay with you, Stephen?
Well, I don't think it's important what the title is, but the point is we have a duopoly right now.
Yeah.
And it has a stranglehold on our government, and we have to break that stranglehold. My theory is that the stranglehold only gets broken if you do have an effective competitive third party.
Okay. And Alex and Kevin, is third party as a term, is that insulting to you or is that okay? Is that fine with you?
I actually think it's one of the things that are keeping other parties from having more traction because it minimizes their participation. And I've said this many times, I've even said it on shows like this before, that if you look at Monroe County, only 51% of the races are even contested by the two major parties. So, and Monroe County is one of the best counties for contested races. So in many places, you don't even have a third party. You only have one party. And if the Libertarians or Greens were to participate, like in the city of Rochester, where the Republicans never run, are we really the third party if we're the only other person running?
Or you could go back to 2008 when Maggie Brooks, 2007, I believe, when Maggie Brooks ran for re-election the first time, there was no Democratic Party opponent at all on the ballot.
Right.
So, okay. So I take Alex's point. And I want to also kind of frame up the hour like this. You heard the intro. You heard this idea that, well, Jill Stein's at 2%. Gary Johnson has been between 7 and 11, 12%. And this was the year that everybody thought, boy, if there's ever an open door for a so-called third-party candidate on the national level, this would be it. And Kevin, you said this is exactly what happens when there's candidates with high negatives. Can you explain why?
Yeah, well, because the campaigns that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are running are based on fear. They are, oh my goodness, if we elect Donald Trump, the country's going to go to ruin. You can't waste your votes on Gary Johnson. We need to save those votes for Hillary Clinton. And then vice versa, we're hearing the exact opposite from the Republican side. We have to stop Hillary Clinton, so that's why you can't vote for Gary Johnson this time around. And so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in a lot of ways. It becomes a barrier to entry for those third parties because people are afraid of wasting their votes because it's a plurality rule system that we have.
All right, Alex White, if we had Marco Rubio against Martin O'Malley, you think Jill Stein would be getting more traction in the polls?
I do, because, well, I think they'd be doing the same things that Hillary and Trump are doing because they do this every presidential race. I mean, the candidates come out and say, not what I'm going to do, but look how horrible things will be if we let our opponent win. And I think that if we had people who were not scaring the public so much, we would definitely be polling better.
Stephen Nemirovsky is coming to Writers and Books on Saturday. It's a 3 p.m. event. It's free and open to the public. And the theme of the event is, will the burn, as in B-E-R-N, Bernie Sanders, will the burn create a third political party? And his books will be there. He's going to be, give me a sense for what you're going to be talking about at Writers and Books on Saturday, Stephen.
Well, again, Evan, I'm going to go back to my theory. And I've been in politics and government for over 30 years. And again, I teach at Columbia. I'm going to go back to the basis for my theory of how this duopoly got to the point where it controls and dominates everything, and why the third party is the fix. There's, I think, getting back to one of the other comments before, there's a whole series of what I call incumbency protection in place. You were talking about in your area, sometimes only the incumbent is running, and no one's even taking them on. I want to walk through how we got there, and then, you know, why the third party is the alternative to break that cycle. And the short version is this. Almost all the answers that are out there to fix the system, whether it's campaign finance reform, redistricting, fixed ballot access, fixed voting rights, all of those require the incumbents to fix the system. They are not going to do that. They have created the system so they can survive and be in scenarios where they have no opposition. There's no incentive for them to fix the system. So you've got to have some element of a third party, even a second party, taking them on and beating them and winning and getting seats at the table in order to shift this entire paradigm.
Okay, well, and is that going to be the focus on Saturday?
Yeah, well, we'll start there, and then we'll get into the books, because the books, as that I've written them, are a roadmap for how to solve this problem. In other words, you talked a lot about why the third parties maybe aren't effective this year or why they're not being more successful. I think one of the reasons is they don't participate in the full two-year or four-year election cycle, and they don't strategize around that time period, and they don't focus on winnable elections. So we're going to talk about the problem, but what I like to do, particularly when I'm teaching, is not just talk about the problem, but talk about solutions, and that's what the book does. The book introduces solutions for how we can actually create these effective third parties.
Okay, listeners, I'd like to hear from you, by the way. I know Kevin wants to jump in there, but let me just tell our listeners, I want to hear from you specifically on this issue here. Have you voted so-called third party? Would you vote that way this year? Do you agree with what Alex and Kevin said, which is that the duopoly always encourages you to be scared of the other and don't, quote-unquote, waste your vote? If you feel that way, or if you don't, I'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I know there are a number of Bernie Sanders voters from the primaries who are listening now. I'm curious to know. The polls say that very few of you are voting for Jill Stein and the Green Party, or very few of you are voting for Gary Johnson and the Libertarian Party. We'd love to hear about why, or maybe you are voting third party, but this is your chance to weigh in on the conversation. Kevin, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I reject that we're not planning around those four-year election cycles and that we're not running candidates in between then. The last time I was on the show, we were talking about local elections. Those are important. We're going to be having candidates in 2017. We have candidates in many races around the state of New York. It's just that most people don't hear about them or they aren't looking for them. So that's one of the biggest – the other biggest barrier to coverage is that we don't get the media coverage and we don't get included in polls. Alex Merced still isn't in the Siena poll that just came out yesterday. They're not including him. So we don't get covered because we're seen as a non-factor in a race – that we're even though we're running people.
Yeah, I have to agree. Kevin is making an important point here. We are still seeing national presidential polls between just Trump and Clinton. And I've said for months, I don't know why that is when you've got Stein and Johnson on most or all ballots. And so I find that to be strangely exclusionary. But you're saying, hey, there are candidates running in the interim, that it's not just every 4 years and sort of starting anew. Yes?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, Alex is laughing at that.
I hear this all the time. People come up and say, how come the Green Party doesn't run candidates in except for the president? And I've run now 5 times for office, all on the Green Party. And, you know, one of the things is our parties have really become more like fan bases for sports teams. And people are not getting information. They're relying upon the party to bring the entire identity to the candidates. And so, you know, on the presidential election, people have some information. But remember, there's assembly races going on. How many people know both the people running or the people running for their assembly race? And how much do you know about them? I mean, this is a real problem in that most of the public relies on party for all their information so that they don't have to do research and they just become fans.
All right, I've got the phones lighting up at this, but Stephen, you want to respond to some of what you just heard? Go ahead.
Well, I agree with these gentlemen that the media does not give third-party candidates the coverage that I think they're entitled to. And particularly in this cycle, I don't think they're giving any of the third-party candidates for president their due. I think the media should have been demanding that a third-party candidate be part of the debates. And as Johnson said early on, if he doesn't get in the debates, he can't win. But I'm going to go back to my concept of the fact that the system, you know, is built in for incumbency protection. That's incumbency protection for the parties. And when you hear Trump talk about the system's rigged, I think it's rigged more against third parties than anything else. If you look at the statistics from the Pew Foundation, at least a third or more of our population is purely independents. Why aren't the independents represented on this debate stage? So one of the things I've written about is poll only the independents and find out who they want on that stage. In other words, poll one third of the population, say, who do you want speaking for us on that stage? Now, they may have picked Clinton this year, they may have picked Trump, but I'm guessing if you only polled the independents, they would have said, we want to see Stein on that stage or we want to see Johnson on that stage. When you get them on that stage, now they're at a level where they can compete. Perot got 19% in his first election, but Perot would not have qualified for the debates. Perot got to 19% because he got into the debates and he was able to leverage his position. So, yes, the media has a stranglehold on this as well as a duopoly. And all of these actors must find a way to get on these stages and to get in front of the people that they want to represent.
All right, our listeners are going to help move this conversation along as we're talking about the future of third parties in this country, and particularly what we've seen in the last year and what it says about the viability of third parties in this country. Alex White from the Green Party, Kevin Wilson from the Libertarian Party are with us in studio. Stephen Nemirovsky is on the phone. He is the author of some books about, I guess I call it the third party series. Stephen, what do you call it?
Third-party series. It will eventually be a trilogy, and the first two books are out now. Thank you.
The first book is Starting in the Middle, and the second book is Strange Bedfellows. And the books will be there at Writers and Books in Rochester on Saturday at 3 p.m., along with Stephen. He's coming here for an event free and open to the public. All the lines are lit up. John and Henrietta, first up. Go ahead, John.
Well, I fully supported Bernie Sanders, voted for him in the primary. He didn't make it. And so I am going to vote for Hillary because I absolutely do not want Donald Trump. I think he is absolutely insane, literally and figuratively speaking. So I've listened to Johnson and Stein. And by the way, I want to say that there is no, I forget the word for it, but the media is not one thing. So I can't see a conspiracy in the media. Well, the media that I pay attention to is NPR and PBS. So, you know, NewsHour had Johnson on, had Stein on, had the VP for Libertarians on. He looked and sounded much better to me than Johnson, by the way. But I can't afford, I can't abide the idea of a President Trump. So I apologize to the third party reps, but I'm going to vote for Hillary. I'm, you know, holding my nose a little bit, but scared to death of Trump. So that's the bottom line for me.
John, thank you. I'm going to let Alex White and our guests respond to that in just a second. I will say, as the member of the media on the panel, I agree with you. Sometimes we speak too monolithically about the media. And I think that this idea that the media is part of this cabal that wants to protect a duopoly and exclude all others is silly. But I do think the media is often lazy. The media falls into this, well, there's only two parties, and the assumption is that if you're not from the two parties, you are not serious. I have seen that. I've probably occasionally been guilty of it. I try to correct that myself by at least having this program. This is my opportunity in the media to say, I want our listeners to hear all voices. I'm a gatekeeper. We did say last week we don't let the white supremacists who've been putting the flyers on this program. But for the most part, we want voices represented if you're running for office. That matters to me in this program. So I don't think there's a media conspiracy. I think sometimes it's sort of a laziness. But Alex White, when it comes to his saying, look, I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, I have to make sure that this is a no-Trump year. Do you disagree with him? I mean, do you view Hillary and Trump as the same, Alex?
Well, the problem I have is there's lots of issues we care about. And, you know, and some of those issues, their policies are identical. Neither one of them is going to do anything about the corruption in our system, about banking and Wall Street. They're not going to do anything about that. Neither one of them is likely to take serious actions during their presidency that will wean us off fossil fuel. In fact, they're both pro-fracking, and Trump is pro-coal, and they both expressed concerns about the jobs that would be lost if we transition off fossil fuel. So, you know, depending on your issues, they're not all that dissimilar.
How about holding control of the biggest nuclear stockpile in the world and being on Twitter at 3 a.m. and getting offended by some Twitter egg and deciding that retribution needs to happen?
You know, people said the same thing about Bush back in 2000.
He was not on Twitter in 2000.
No,
there was no
Twitter. Wasn't, but they said that he was not stable enough to be control of the nuclear stockpile. And they used the same sort of fear and have been for years. And the long as we keep falling for it as a country and keep voting for the lesser of two evils, the two parties have no incentive to give us anything else.
I take that point. I think some people think George W. Bush is Gandhi compared to Trump when it comes to holding a stock.
But at the time, they did not.
Okay. All right. I take that point. Kevin Wilson?
Yeah. And well, I mean, between Hillary and Trump, I think Hillary's predictably dangerous, and I think Trump is unpredictably dangerous. In any normal election year, if you weren't aware of who the parties were, a former two-term governor with a successful track record would look like a superstar in this election. But
that's Gary Johnson.
That's Gary Johnson, Governor Gary Johnson and Governor Bill Weld. And in regards to the media, I did want to get to that is, yeah, I know it's not monolithic. I don't think it's a conspiracy to keep us out, but I do agree that it is lazy at times. And that particularly when you get coverage around Gary Johnson's Aleppo moment, right? If you watch 30 seconds past that initial clip, he gives a great answer. But that's not the narrative that ends up being fit around our candidate. So the narrative gets built. Gary Johnson is misinformed about foreign policy. But if you watch the entire clip, if you watch Gary Johnson's full foreign policy speeches, you can see that there's a coherent policy in place that to me is far less dangerous than the policy of that Hillary Clinton wants to pursue in Syria.
Stephen, go ahead. What do you think?
Well, I agree with both of those sets of comments. But And I want to get away from what your listener said. Part of what I think the problem is when we're looking at the third-party aspect of this is, and this is where I have a roadmap to how you get there, you don't start out running for president. You don't put your third parties out there and have this enormous energy around trying to elect a president because, among other things, if you elect Jill Stein or you elect Gary Johnson, they have no base in Congress. The system remains dysfunctional. You get nothing done. I think everything has to begin at the local level, and I think you have to build up to get there.
Okay,
but
I mean,
I don't go for the spoiler vote stuff. I think if you do your homework and you do your research and you honestly believe that Jill Stein would be the best president of the United States or Johnson, I think that's the vote you have to make right now, because unfortunately, without getting into personalities, the Republicans and Democrats, they don't have a system that works right now. I don't think our government is functional. So no matter who you get in as president, they're still sitting on top of a totally dysfunctional system. And if you strip away the personalities, I still see a four-year slog of nothing getting done and very important problems going by the wayside. So I think the third-party votes are part of the signal that has to be given to say, you guys better fix this.
Stephen, you mentioned that you've got this roadmap that you think that will establish the third party on the national stage, and it starts with running and winning local races. What's step two?
Well, what happens is if you take a legislature, and your New York Senate is not is be a very interesting case. I think your New York Senate right now is roughly 31-32 or something. It's very tight. And you actually have a scenario in New York where you have that Democratic Independent Conference kind of thing. If you had a third party in your New York Senate that was independent of the other two parties that had only three or four seats, they would be able to exert the same level of force that this Democratic Conference is exerting. And you've seen how the Democratic Conference is exerting force in New York. What if you had a truly independent, truly third party that held only three or four seats in your New York Senate? I would like to suggest to you that that would force the paradigm to shift, and that would force government to actually start functioning better, and if nothing else, to form compromise and to solve problems.
Let me go down to Hector, listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio. WEOS 89.5 FM is Brett. Go ahead, Brett.
Hey, Evan. How you doing?
Good.
I'm voting for Jill Stein, and I'll tell you how I worked it out. I was going to hold my nose and vote for Hillary, and I found someone that I knew who was going to hold their nose and vote for Trump, and we shook hands and said, let's vote for Jill Stein and not hold our noses at all. That way we're canceling each other out. We don't have to worry about a spoiler vote. I encourage other people to do the same.
You got somebody who is going to vote for Donald Trump to vote for Jill Stein?
Absolutely. Yep. We're both
okay.
Very environmentally minded. And as your guest was saying, to start on the local level, we've been chipping away here in Hector, getting people onto our town board who are more green-minded.
Okay.
And it's happening. It takes a long time.
Thank you, Brett. I appreciate the phone call. Thanks for listening down there in Hector. And hope, by the way, for all of our friends listening, sometimes harvest has been going on in the Finger Lakes, and sometimes Connections is playing in the wineries. So certainly a lot of love for the people who've been working away throughout the Finger Lakes region throughout harvest season. Alex White, what do you think about Brett's comment there saying, hey, I was going to hold my nose, vote for Hillary. I found somebody who was going to hold their nose, vote for Trump. And we said, let's not do that. Let's vote third party and feel good about it. What do you think?
I think it's a fantastic solution. I also think people need to think about the safe state idea. There are states that are very likely to go for one of the two candidates. And in that state, voting for a third party in that state is very safe option. And there is actually obtainable goals in this election for third parties. The 5% number gets you matching funds from the federal government. And this would make a huge difference to the Libertarians or the Green Party. And if people would only recognize that, like in New York, Hillary Clinton's very likely to win and it's likely not to be close. And under those circumstances, you're very free to use your vote for what you actually believe in.
Kevin Wilson?
Yeah, I agree. And there's a great video called Balanced Rebellion that has Abe Lincoln on it that proposes the same thing for Gary Johnson. And as much as I don't really like the idea of saying, oh, it's a safe state, but yeah, Hillary Clinton's up 54-30 and Gary Johnson's at 5. But getting that 5%, getting 5 or 10% state sends a huge message to both the Republicans and Democrats that you need to look for something else. So to me, voting third party matters more in this case.
Yeah, gentlemen, I think you raise an excellent point, and I don't think your listeners get how important it is. We talked about the system of incumbency protection. Well, the third-party candidates normally have very significant ballot requirements. They often need 3, 4, 5, 10 times more the petitions than the established parties. So what these gentlemen are saying is if you get the 5% threshold, they will get ballot access, I don't know New York's scenario, but maybe for the next 2 cycles. So instead of taking an enormous amount of time and energy and resource to get their candidates on the ballot, they're going to be on the ballot already. These parties can then take the time and money and energy and start working on getting their people elected. It's a huge advantage for the Republicans and the Democrats, and only a 5%, and in many other states it could be as low as even 3 or 2%. Just that little of a vote would be a major push for these parties. So, gentlemen, I couldn't agree more.
All right, I'm late for our only break, and we're coming back to your phone calls. All the lines lit up, and there's a lot of people who want to weigh in on how they're voting and why as we talk about the future of third parties with Alex White from the Green Party, Kevin Wilson from the Libertarian Party, Stephen Nemirovsky. He's the author of the Third Party series of books. He's an adjunct professor with the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia University, and he's coming to Rochester on Saturday for an event at Writers and Books at 3 p.m. It's free and open to the public with the theme, Will the Burn Create a Third Political Party? Let's get that only break and come back to your phone calls on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, first hour is Unleashed the Pet Show. We're going to be introduced to some dogs who can sniff out pollution in the Great Lakes. And we'll also talk about proposed declawing legislation when it comes to cats. In our second hour, Second Opinion Live, we focus on the bacteria in our body, good and bad, understanding it. We'll talk with you on Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm going to squeeze in a couple of quick emails. Mike writes to us and says, I'm a registered Democrat. I'm voting for a third party in the hopes that the multi-party format will exist someday. I think it's silly we only get 2 choices for the most important office in America. I also think it's pretty unprofessional and borderline unscrupulous that third party representatives are not allowed to be part of the debates, kind of like how Alex was refused to debate with Lovely Warren when he ran for office. And he says, keep up the good work. Carrie writes to us and says, wow, this email is really small type, Carrie. You must have incredible eyesight, or maybe it's my format. She says, writing from Pen Yan, she says, I don't understand why the Green and Libertarian parties don't stage their own debate against each other. I would tune in to see that. That actually has happened in the last couple of elections, and it often does, and it usually exists on YouTube. It's pretty easy to find, but again, the media doesn't do much covering of it. Before I get back to your phone calls, Randy Gorbin's here, our news director from WXXI. Hi, Randy.
Good to see you, Evan. What a great discussion. And as we, you and I were just talking about off the air, I mean, just getting a ton of phone calls and responses on social media. And again, it's the kind of thing that social media and actually WXXI and public broadcasting do so well. And we try to bring you stories you're not getting in some of the, as they like to say, the mainstream media. We consider ourselves mainstream, but in a very positive way in that we're providing you context. We're providing you some voices that you normally don't hear during the election cycle. And if you believe in that and you believe in our mission, this is one of those times we need to ask for your help financially. Any amount will do, but we do need that help. We have a goal set. We want to reach that by the end of the week. You can do that by calling 454-6300. People standing by, as they say, to take your pledges. And you can also do that online, WXXI.org, or, of course, very easy with the WXXI app. Evan?
Thank you very much, Randy Gorbin. Suzanne writes, what about Evan McMullen, who's winning some polls in Utah? McMullen is a Republican who's running as an independent as a protest to Trump. So he's not exactly in that third-party mode, but he could win Utah. That's a fascinating case. And Suzanne, thank you for that. Joe writes to us and says, I'm sorry. Joe writes to us and says, I think Trump is a buffoon and Hillary is corrupt. Neither of them should be president. Benjamin writes, third-party candidates this year are the same as Trump. They're not prepared to be president. You have to get better candidates. What Ben just wrote to us, and I want to get the panel's reaction to this. What Ben just wrote to us is reflected in a couple of other emails, which is this. People are saying, some who are writing the program saying, I'd vote for third parties if they field qualified candidates, and they are viewing Jill Stein and Gary Johnson through this lens of unprepared. And that's exactly what John Oliver did this weekend when he sort of lampooned third parties. His conclusion was that the two serious third parties, Libertarians and Greens right now, are still not doing it when it comes to fielding qualified candidates. This is John Oliver talking about Jill Stein. He says she gets way too down in the weeds of conspiracy theorists, including vaccines, and he also said 9/11 truthers. Let's listen.
This strategic vagueness even applies to answering a question from a 9/11 truther.
I believe that the hijackers were patsies. They did have intent, but there was no ways they could fly those planes the way they did, and there's no way those steel buildings could fall the way they did.
Do you have an opinion about that?
So I think we need the full story, and the 9/11 commission itself said we don't have the full story. So I would simply bring back that commission. This isn't controversial, in my view. It's time to get the full story.
What are you doing? You know that man thinks you just agreed with him now, right? You can't just hear a conspiracy theory, fan the flames, and then walk away. Is Katy Perry JonBenet Ramsey? Well, identity theft is a real and persistent issue in this day and age, and we really need to look into that.
So that's John Oliver riffing on Jill Stein. Here's what he said about Gary Johnson. He said Gary Johnson steps all over it when he talks about global warming, and here is that exchange.
Wait until you hear his stance on combating climate change.
Should we take the long-term view when it comes to global warming? I think that we should. And the long-term view is that in billions of years, the sun is going to actually grow and encompass the Earth, right? So global warming is in our future.
That's your plan? Don't worry, we'll all be dead eventually anyway.
All right, so in John Oliver's conclusion here, Kevin, I'll start with you, is to say, these are just not serious candidates. We gave them a clear look, and we concluded unfit. What do you make of that?
I think that this is the only clip of third parties that many people are going to see, and that's mighty unfortunate that people need to look into the full records of these candidates. It's very easy to pull embarrassing moments from Trump and Hillary Clinton
from all
as well.
Of them.
From all candidates. And if you framed it in such a way where that's the only narrative that you see, yeah, you're going to get a warped perception of a candidate instead of, you know, again, two people who are two former governors, Bill Weld, who was reelected by the largest margin in Massachusetts state history.
But Kevin, I think John Oliver would say, no, that is representative of who they are. That's why he presented those clips. You're saying baloney.
Yeah, I do say baloney. Again, same thing when I was talking about the Aleppo incident. If you watch 30 seconds afterwards, the narrative doesn't match up. So what I implore everyone to do is to take a serious look at these candidates. Don't just accept the clickbait headlines that you see or the funny videos from John Oliver and look deeply into it. If you really disagree with Gary Johnson's policy around global warming, and he was joking in that clip, by the way, or around tax policy, sure. But take a serious look at it besides the small clips that you see in the news media and on Facebook.
Alex White, this is where I'm going to agree with John Oliver. That response from Jill Stein to a 9/11 truther was almost disqualifyingly bizarre. But what do you make of the whole notion of sort of lampooning her in that way?
Well, you know, Hillary Clinton has what could possibly be considered the best resume of a candidate running for a presidential in a very long time. She has served at many levels and has depth of experience. Yet, when she was asked questions about whether nuclear power plants should be part of her energy solution, she waffled back and forth and had the same sort of embarrassing exchange if you put it together over time. All the candidates do this. And one of the problems with that, one of the ways people get the experience to not do this is to win office. And third-party candidates have a plethora of things preventing them from getting into the office to have the experience that will make you believe that they're more serious. And as a result of all the other things, when you run a presidential candidate from a third party, it's highly unlikely they're polished to the level of the main party candidates because of the exclusion of access and money and everything else at the lower levels.
I actually think Bill Weld is the most polished person running on the national stage right now, but I take the point. And Bill Weld has run
right.
Gubernatorial elections, but I take the point Alex is making. Stephen, what do you think?
You know, again, going back to what I said before about my third-party concept is you don't start at that level. It is the hardest thing to do. Just think about how hard it is to think about running for president, being in front of the media like this, constantly answering his questions, and making one faux pas be so blown up that it distorts everything, like I think Kevin was saying. So it's nearly next to impossible. Having said that, without trying to take a position on Jill Stein or Gary Johnson, there is a lot there. And particularly for Gary Johnson, as someone said before, he was a governor of a state. His running partner, Weld, is the governor of a state. And they're kind of pitching this idea of a co-presidency. There's a lot of material there. And I think if very fully vetted and you looked across the whole spectrum of their presentation, you would find that the quality is good as we've ever had from a third party. And I think representative of a scenario where someone could say maybe this test is at a presidential level. So I don't agree with the listener. I think the Libertarians in particular, the package they put together this time, is compelling, particularly when you look at the entire spectrum of their work.
There's also a double standard in that the Aleppo gaffe hurt Gary Johnson greatly. Donald Trump did not know what the nuclear triad is, embarrassed himself there. 4 months later, got asked by the same interview, Hugh Hewitt, essentially serving him up a chance to correct it, and still didn't know. Talk about not having any intellectual curiosity. But how many people know about that compared to Aleppo? Everybody knows about Aleppo and Gary Johnson. So I think, in many ways, I think that double standard does exist. Let me get back to your phone calls because we've got a lot of people who want to get in. Rob in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Rob.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have voted third party locally. I've actually voted for Alex White. The problem I have with a third party nationally is the fact that if nobody gets to the magical number of Electoral College votes, it goes to the House of Representatives, disenfranchising tens of millions of voters. So what's the procedure there, a constitutional convention to change that process? And which House of Representatives gets to choose, the outgoing or the newly elected House of Representatives? And thank you, and I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, thank you, Rob. Who wants to start there? Alex, he said he voted for you, so you can start.
This has happened before on the presidential level. And it went to the House of Representatives, and it was the lame duck House of Representatives that got to determine. And it was Rutherford B. Hayes won the election based upon votes in the House of Representatives. So this would not be unheard of if it happened. But if a third-party candidate had thrown this into that issue, even if they had been the top vote-getter and the top number of ballots from the Electoral College, it's highly unlikely without representatives in Congress they would have any chance to win that election.
Okay, Kevin?
Yeah, well, it's a long shot, and I think that I might be misunderstanding this, but the procedure was it had to be the top three Electoral College vote getters. So it'd be between folks who had actually won states. And in this election, I don't know, I might be willing to take a gamble on that. And it's not totally unrepresented either, because we do have representatives in Congress who make decisions for us all the time. But so I don't think it's a bad thing.
Okay. Stephen Nemirovsky.
Yeah, I don't think we have enough time to talk about the Electoral College here today. But to twist this a bit, there's a concept that's been put out there of ranked choice voting.
Yes.
And that might be something that downstream helps solve a lot of these problems. So in that scenario, and I don't know if it was Alex or Kevin who said, you would want to have representatives in Congress there when that vote happened, the electoral vote. I think looking at some other mechanism like that might let you think we could get there in 4 years, 6 years, or 8 years. This, unfortunately, does not happen overnight. But it has to start soon.
John writes to the program and says, I think it would be very beneficial to our republic if we rank ordered our choices when voting, i.e. choice number one, Clinton, number two, Stein, number three, so on and so forth. And there is a system. We've talked about it on the show. I mentioned it a lot. Look it up. BORDA, the Board Account. I think just in terms of equitability and finding candidates that are not so polarizing, you're not going to find a better system, but you're also not going to find a system that's harder to manipulate. And my guess is we will never see it here, but I think that's an interesting question there. Back to your phone calls, and we will go to, who's next? Who's been waiting the longest? Herman in Brighton. Go ahead, Herman.
Hello. Unlike some other democratic systems in the world where you have to have an absolute majority in order to win, and there are multiple parties, but then they have a runoff between the top two vote-getters, we currently have a system where you can win with the candidate with the plurality of the vote wins. Now, what you just talked about now is a possible solution to that, but at the moment, under the current system, voting third party, and the more people that vote, the more this is the case, the greater the risk that you would be shooting yourself in the foot because you would throw the election to the major party candidate that is farthest away from your desired policies and your ideology, because you would be splitting the vote between the voters for the third party and the vote for the major party candidate that is relatively closer to your position. And there are historical examples of, and I think it's very important to learn our lessons from history. The 2000 election, I'm sure that most Nader voters cared about the environment, and they ended up contributing to throwing the election to a candidate who was not interested in the environment and who, in fact, allowed the environment to be trashed. And then, of course, in Germany, during the Weimar Republic, the Nazis won with 30-something percent of the vote because the multiple parties that ranged from center to left could not unify and split the vote among themselves. So it's really self-defeating under our current system to have strong a lot of votes for a third party. The more votes, the more self-defeating. If we can get a change, a constitutional change, which as I'm sure everybody realizes is not an easy thing to do, and either have runoffs between the top two vote getters or a system like that was just talked about in the last few minutes with ranking, then that might make more sense to have third parties, but not under our current system.
All right, Herman, thank you. Stephen Nemirovsky, what do you think?
Yeah, but I want to take you back a bit in history to answer this question, because I don't know how many of our listeners understand or remember. Our Constitution was not designed to have this imperial presidency that we have now. Our Constitution was actually designed for Congress to be the stronger of the three branches of government. And the executive branch was not perceived to be the strongest. I was at a lecture the other day that walked through how over the last 100 years, essentially, starting with Teddy Roosevelt, the presidency has grown in power and stature. And we're at a point now where, because Congress is so unbelievably dysfunctional, the president must step in and provide leadership and fill that void. And we know President Obama has taken a lot of actions that have been challenged in the court that were singular actions that he probably may have been forced to take because Congress wouldn't act. So part of the paradigm here is to get back to the way the system used to work and have these people in Congress and the Senate representatives become grown-ups again and actually take control of their portion of the government and run it better. We will not then have to have this fear of the executive branch, again, being so imperial and being so scary about one-button pushes and being able to control results that will be inevitable.
Okay. Gentlemen in studio, want to respond? Kevin?
Yeah. Well, I think Stephen's spot on there. And absolutely, checking the imperial presidency, reducing the power of the executives is incredibly important. And especially as we start to look at what a President Trump might look like, I really hope that people take that responsibility seriously. But getting back to what the caller said, good old Duverger's law with the first-past-the-post voting system theory, I understand where that's coming from. But again, voting for a third party, especially in a state like New York where Hillary Clinton's definitely going to take the state, sending that signal to the major two parties to tell them that the candidates that they've put up are not acceptable is extremely important and extremely valuable. And if they don't respond to those signals, those voter signals, then, well, they're going to lose their spot as one of the two major parties in a first-past-the-post system. And one of the other parties, like the Greens or Libertarians, will end up taking that spot. So I think it's extremely important, especially in elections like this, to vote for third parties.
Alex?
Historically, third-party candidates have suggested issues that have later become mainstream ideas. And it's because the other two parties have been afraid that the ideas espoused by the third party are popular enough that they could actually lose their positions of power. And if nothing else, voting for a third party sends an incredibly strong message. Particularly libertarians and Greens have very solid ideas behind them that tells the people in power that, hey, we the public care about this being a major issue that you need to do something about.
All right, let me try to get as many of your calls in. Hang in with us, and let's try to move quickly. Becky in Irondequoit. Next up, go ahead, Becky.
Hi. So I just want to talk from a voter group that's under 30. And my peers, I feel like, have been really disenfranchised with the whole system. And most of them don't vote in any local elections at all. They're only voting in the presidential elections, if they're voting in that. And they're just... they've been so uninterested in it. They kind of have washed their hands of it. And I'm hoping that this election, when they kind of see that our country is like hitting a rock bottom with Trump being an actual candidate, and like it's a possibility, it's baffling to so many people, that I'm hoping more of my peers are starting to get involved. And I know friends of mine have asked me to teach them about politics and what's going on locally, and asking about like what's the House of Representatives, and asking questions and starting to try and get involved. So I'm hoping that maybe third party candidates will be something more possible in the future, when people actually start getting involved, start caring, start changing up what's going on in Congress, and maybe it'll make our future a little bit brighter.
Becky, thanks for that. I'm going to let the youngest person on the panel, Kevin, respond to that. You've probably heard a lot of that kind of thing. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, no, I have heard a lot of that. And again, I hope this spurs people to get engaged in the process. There are some polls that have come out that said one-third of voters under 35 were considering Gary Johnson, which was significant enough to prompt a response from the Hillary Clinton campaign. So if you reject the two major parties, two old parties, candidates that they put up over and over again, then the best response is to look into a third party and say that you reject that altogether. If you threaten not to vote for him, if you sit this one out, it doesn't really send a very strong message. But if you take your vote elsewhere, again, that sends a much stronger message than what you'd get by sitting out or voting for the lesser of two evils.
And Becky, thanks for caring about your community and staying engaged, and even when times seem sort of difficult or hard to get inspired. So I appreciate that and the phone call.
Evan, comment for quickly here?
Yeah, Greg
that's
and Rochester. Hold on 1 second,
for
Steve.
Saturday is built around the burn, because okay. I think Becky's generation, these millennials, now could be a time for them to think about all these issues very carefully. And Bernie Sanders has opened the door for them. He's shown them that how to coalesce around issues. He showed them how to organize. He showed them where leadership can come from. And he's actually shown them how to raise money. I think their conversation starts on November 9th, and I think they've got to start that conversation on November 9th.
Yeah, certainly Bernie Sanders himself has said it wasn't about him. And then the question is, after the election, if it's not about just one person, what are you going to do going forward? Thank you, Becky, for the phone call. Greg in Rochester next. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate your show and everything you do for Rochester.
Sure.
As far as the campaign this year, I believe that if whoever's chosen, if things don't pan out during their first term, I think the country would have no other choice but to lean more towards a third-party candidate, or at least the third-party candidate will become much more prevalent in everyday conversations if things don't turn around. And the thing that kind of scares me is when you have people like George Bush Sr., and then you have his son be president, and you have Bill Clinton, then you have his wife potentially becoming president. It seems like for as many people that live within this country and that would be qualified to run for president, why it's so narrowed down to certain families. And I think that people just need to all in all wake up and really start realizing that sometimes the left and the right are the same wings of the same bird. And that's all I got for you.
Greg, thanks for the phone call. It is going to be interesting 4 years from now, because as Kevin mentioned earlier, you do have two candidates from the major parties with the highest negative combined ratings we've ever seen in the modern era, and one of the two is going to be a candidate again in 4 years. And so maybe they'll have a tremendous first term. It's possible, and they'll be very popular, and they'll cruise to re-election. But But it will be very interesting to see not only who the losing party of the major parties puts up 4 years from now, but whether third parties feel like they've got an opening. And Mike's email is a good way to sort of help wrap this discussion. Mike writes the program. He's a little concerned about what happens to a third party even when they gain some success. Here's what he writes. He says, the problem remains the pursuit of campaign money. Third party candidates are at a distinct disadvantage, and even if a third party is successful in one election cycle, the established parties will redouble their efforts in the next cycle to target that party. The Dems and Republicans will use the enemy of my enemy is my friend strategy to neutralize a threatening third party. And so I wonder real briefly here, Kevin, if it's money, do you agree that money is an issue?
It is a challenge, but not possible.
As a libertarian, I doubt you support public financing.
No.
Okay. So what do you do about the money issue there?
Well, we need to show that we're viable candidates. And I think in this day and age, when you look at Trump's candidacy, most of his candidacy has ridden on media and social media. He's been able to build an organic network. Money isn't everything. And you can also look back to Eric Cantor's race a couple years ago. His opponent was outspent like 10-1, mm-hmm. and he still got crushed. Eric Cantor did, the Speaker of the House at the time. So money isn't everything, but barriers to access, like the presidential debates, which is run by the privately run Commission on Presidential Debates, colluded by the two parties, that is a real significant barrier to the strategy that I see as being more viable.
Okay, and Alex, do you agree that the Dems and Republicans would target a third party if that third party starts to break through?
In Portland, we had a Green Party win a city council member, and not only did the Republicans, which had frequently run candidates against Democrats, not run against a Democrat that was challenging him 2 years later, but they actually endorsed the Democratic opponent of the Green. And when he won a second time, they agreed to redistrict the area to move him out of the district he had won in. So the parties very much want to retain control, and pretty much our election system is about the two parties being in control.
Well, we shall see, and you can learn a lot more of what Stephen Nemirovsky thinks on Saturday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon at Writers and Books. The event is free and open to the public. Stephen will not only be here, but his books will be there. The third party series of books, 2 of the first 3, volume 1 starting in the middle and volume 2, Strange Bedfellows. We'll see you on Saturday, Stephen, and thanks for the conversation with our listeners.
Thank you, Evan. I greatly appreciate it.
And Alex White from the Green Party. Nice to see you, Alex. Thank you. Kevin Wilson from the Libertarian Party. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Matthew Dowd was the Republican strategist for George W. Bush. Well, he's not a Republican. He's an independent. But he was a strategist for George W. Bush's campaigns in 2000 and 2004. He's now an independent, works for ABC News. He says we are on the cusp of the rise of third parties. He's voting third party this year. But there's a big wall to climb, so we shall see. Thanks for all the great comments. Rob Braden, Megan Mack, I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.